Monday, May the 14th of 2018, Westlake City Schools Board of Education work session. Roll call.
Fanukin?
Here.
Kraft?
Here.
Lozinski?
Yeah, here.
Winter?
Here.
Dr. Stoll is absent this evening.
If everyone would join me and stand up, face the flag, hand over the heart. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight. We're happy that you're here with us as we try to make our schools the best that they could be. Thank you for being here. Approval of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? Roll call.
Winter?
Yes.
Lozinski?
Yes.
Fanukin?
Yes.
Kraft?
Yes.
Motion carries. Okay.
At this time, we have a hearing of the public. Anyone who would like to address the board at this time regarding any issue on the agenda, please raise your hand. Let us know that you're coming to the podium. Seeing none, we'll move forward. Moving to informative reports. We have with us today Mr. Cipollone and Mr. Wilson to discuss the athletic department. Gentlemen.
I think we are here to hopefully solidify the proposed drug testing guidelines. I think we are here to answer any questions you may have. I think all of you, or at least most of you, have had a copy shared in Google Docs. And since our last meeting, since the last time we presented to the board, we had a hearing at public hearing at Lee Bernstein Middle School. At that point, we talked about doing a basically session with parents, with coaches, with club advisors, and with student representation, which we did on April 17th. I kind of talk about, okay, we said we were kind of stuck with clubs. What is our goal for clubs? What does this look like for the different groups? Tony and I had that meeting with that group. We had Mrs. Cruzy from the high school who represented our clubs, Coach Spriggs, Megan Spriggs, Megan Medical, for those of you who remember her that way as well, Jake Collins, Lydia Chobin, Gazal Adibi, and we had Mrs. Christine Brown as well as Tony and I. So since that time, we have held that meeting as well. So I think we're here to answer questions based off of what Tony said as well.
Can you talk a bit about the process? So I know that when we talked about building guidelines for this, and actually just to mention to the board, one of the things that we've sent out in reports is, and we could talk about this a little bit later, is having guidelines versus policy. And one, especially in the first year of a program, having the guidelines be set outside of the policy would probably be a smarter move, because then it gives us the flexibility to make changes without having at least one. I know in an emergency situation you can do one reading in a board meeting, but when you're looking, especially if you're looking to take away a part of a student's season,
right,
one board meeting could be a significant number of activities. So we could talk about this part later. That's why he's referring to guidelines instead of policy when he says that. But I know that even in our hearings, there were some areas we had Great Lakes Biomedical in, who went through multiple times how random selection happened. They talked about the testing procedures on how they would actually be performed. And if, I believe it was the feedback we received, there were certain areas that people were concerned about. What happens through if there's a positive test or a non-negative? And is it different per middle school, per high school? Is it different per club? And I think another part was a connection to counseling. There are the things that we talked about. The things that you guys addressed in here, if you want to talk about, start by talking about the middle school.
And you know what I think, and I'll just chime in, I think this is the same message what we've said all along since November when we started this. We wanted to do this the right way. I think that was the lesson that we heard from Eric Fraunbach, Mavon as well, not to rush through this. So, I mean, this has been an ongoing process, and we have solicited feedback. So I think we would just like to reiterate, this is not a punitive. Our goal is not to catch. Our goal is to help. And I think that is even what we discussed when we met with our students. It was great. The student, the panel or the meeting with the students was amazing. They had great ideas. And actually, I think it was Jay Collins who told us, it's like, I think you're overthinking this. So it was pretty good. When we went along. So that's kind of where we are. If you want to touch on some things.
I just think a couple of things that probably have changed since probably the last time you may have seen this or looked at it, based on our discussions. One is that we were struggling with, okay, we already have an athletic code of conduct. So if you get in trouble with drugs or alcohol, here's what happens to you. And then the parking pass was kind of easy. You can revoke the parking privileges for a period of time that matches what you do with the athletes.
The which one would be 20% of the entire year?
It's 20% of the season. Left.
Parking.
So parking, we put in here would be 36 schools.
Okay.
So that's roughly 20% of their parking privileges.
Got it.
The one we were struggling with was our clubs and organizations. Because, you know, a lot of those clubs don't meet all the time. They don't do a lot with each other. So we felt like, and this has actually came out, I think the students were the ones that suggested this, they were like, well, why don't we have, instead of removing them, because that's, again, something that might push people into, abusing drugs, the isolation, those kinds of things when you read the studies, why don't we keep them in the club and have them do some sort of community service that will be approved by the club advisor and with the permission of the principal as well. So
that in part came from students.
Which also came from, I think, Ms. Cruzy, who's a club advisor.
Ms. McGinty, who was
in
the
meeting
as well. I forgot to mention Ms. McGinty.
And so, that really, I think everybody was like, yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Now, that would be on top of the service hours they have to collect all
that. Right, correct. So this would be something else. And like we were talking, as we get emails all the time from Madeline Crandall. They're looking for people to help out with either the senior center or just around town. So we may even be able to have like a ready-made list of, okay, so you got in trouble, like, so here's some choices you have to make this right. We thought that would be a good link to the community as well, but also keeping that student involved in that club or organization that they're already involved in. So, I think that was one of the changes. The other change you may see in here that came out of that is I think everybody in that room, and I will tell you in that room, we had the parent that we had in the room, she has a child that's in DIS, or actually in elementary who's going into DIS. She has a child that's at LBMS, and then she has a high school child. And I think we all agree that if a positive test occurred in grades 7 through 8, we want the key is there's no penal part of that. There's get this person help, get them the counseling they need, and let's keep going with what they're doing as far as what they're involved in. So I think those would be kind of the differences that you may have seen from when we first started to now. The other thing is we progressively, as you follow it through here, it progressively bumps up. Again, like Paul said, and like I think we've said over and over again, the goal of this is not to catch anybody. If we don't catch anybody, then I think that we're probably doing a good job. Is that realistic? Probably not. Probably not. So the people that we do, that do test positive, let's help them. Let's make sure that they're getting back on track. Are we going to help everybody? Again, probably not. But if we help one or two or three or four a year, it's worth every penny in my opinion.
In larger picture, as Scott has said repeatedly, Dr. Dobbin, this ties into the larger K-12 picture in the Westlake schools at this point with where we're moving our health curriculum. This should tie in perfectly as these kids work their way up to the high school as well. And just a side note related to Madeline Crandall, has reached out to me. We're in the process of setting up a meeting to see what this looks like. The city will be very much on board with this as well.
I have a question about the procedure, because somebody asked me this recently and I didn't know the answer. What do the Ignatius and Ed's, do they do hair samples or is it urine samples?
I believe they do hair.
Okay, so why did we decide to go with the urine samples as opposed to the hair samples?
Hair takes a lot longer to process.
Okay.
So they don't, my understanding of their program is that it's all private.
Okay.
So there's no penal part, I guess, is the best way to put that.
And if you recall,
they can be their whole student.
Right, right.
And yes, and if you recall, the gentleman from Great Lakes, Kyle, they can pre-screen these right there. So he may, you know, we might have 35 kids that test and he pre-screens and 34 of them are already fine. Then we're only looking at two and we can move along. So.
I know Great Lakes was suggesting that is just tends to be a standard that is used out there, tends to be reliable. I believe certain things that the test that we would use would pick up, whereas a hair sample would not pick up. Hair, I believe, as well. Hair follicles will keep a particular drug in that hair for a longer period of time.
And I think when you look, I think one of the things that drew me to Kyle as well as Great Lakes, I believe that they are used by Ohio Department of Transportation, which is, that's a big contract with, you know, some serious things if you violate that. So that's the test that they use. So
yeah.
I think that tells me we're in good hands and good shape with the test that we're electing to use.
I'll just say that I appreciate the thoughtfulness and the time that we're taking. I think about what I believe young man or student said that belief that maybe we're overthinking it, but I'm glad we spent the time on it. And I'm glad we spent the time on it from a point of view that I didn't know how the community as a whole would react. And I know that the board has received a vast majority of approval of such a policy. I didn't know how positive it was going to be. I was surprised how positive. And I'd say to the point of unofficially, to the point of to 80-90% in the positive side. So it tends to be quite positive.
I want to thank you for all the work that you've done on this. And as far as overthinking, you probably are, but it's always better to be prepared, you know, and than to fly by the seat of your pants. I also do like the idea that it's the guidelines instead of policy, because I'm sure you're going to have some tweaks to do.
Absolutely, sure.
The first year or two, so I'm just very impressed that with the students that have been involved too, and the parents that. Been a very thoughtful process.
Tony and I hope May 21st and 22nd, we have class election speeches coming up those days, and we've talked all along about our communication. To us, we said all along, we need to get in front of the students, describe what this looks like, also answer any questions they have. I'm sure there's hundreds of questions. So that's also part of the plan. The other part of the plan is making sure that if and when this goes through, that we communicate with families, and a lot of this is rolling it out appropriately. Like talking about some of our forms, beginning of the year, things that we'll have to address as well. So we do have a plan moving forward, communicating with students before school is out, for sure, at least 8th, well, we'll probably be down 6th.
Probably go 6th.
Yeah, 6th through 11th.
Through 11th.
Mm-hmm. So to go talk. But for sure, I already know when the high school dance are going to be.
I think it's very important. I mean, not that it's not important with our high school, but I think most of the students around the high school have heard that we're going to do this, or that we're proposing to do this. Probably not as many in the 6th and 7th grade and in 8th grade, so I think that conversation has to be has to be done before they leave for the summer to kind of say, this is what's going on. This is how this is going to work, and kind of almost walk them through step by step how it would work, because, I mean, obviously that's not, probably not a normal act for a sixth or a seventh grader to go pee in a cup. The high school kids, most of them that have jobs, have probably done that, quite frankly.
I want to reiterate what they've all said. Thank you for putting the time in, for the great conversation that we all had at Burnison, and then for opening it up to parents, staff, and student input. So that's awesome. And then my only things, I think I'll just share them with you. I'll give you my notes, because some of mine were just wording issues. It's like, maybe you want to put this up here. It's just my little editor hat on. But a couple of questions that I had, when it got to, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth page, and you'll see 6 results of a positive test. Mm-hmm. Right above there, it just said, testing will be done by Great Lakes Biomedical only so long as this is the company the school selects. I don't know, policy ease, but we might not want to put the name in there just to leave ourselves open.
Correct.
That's just like me thinking. But it's not something that, I was just thinking about that. And then the other piece, which was discussed quite a bit, Kyle discussed this at both meetings, both community meetings, what happens for those kids that have a non-negative, they're on a prescription, and we didn't really delineate it, but we discussed it quite a bit at those meetings, that the staff physician at Biomedical is going to give the parent a call, the parent verifies a prescription, and then everything's fine. We might want to put a little statement in there. I don't know what you all think about that.
I think about
just for anybody reading it that might not have come to one of those meetings can see that, okay, well, my child is on an ADD medication that's going to show up as an amphetamine, and I want to make sure that we're just kind of making sure that people know.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah. So that was that. And then the only other thing I just wanted to clarify, because it was left out, and so that was page 5. So turn to page 6, and that's when you were talking about the consequences, results of a positive test. And on letter B, it said, for student athletes, the student will be denied participation for a minimum of 20% of the season schedule. And I know you've talked about that generally what coaches have done in the past is the student will come in, if there's a violation, will come in practice, just will miss the games. Do we want to put games in there, or did you have a reason for leaving out the word games?
Yeah, I didn't match the wording that's in the current.
Oh,
okay. I think that matches exactly. But that brings up a good point, because we talked to Coach Spriggs, who actually has a stricter. So we have our student code of conduct, but some coaches have stricter policies on their own teams. And we talked to her about, you know, if we have a policy like this, this is the policy.
Yes, this is the
policy. Oh.
Instead of, if you get, I think her comment was, if you get caught or test positive, they would be off of our team. We said, well, you can't do that.
No.
So, and that was that, and that was good. I mean,
I'm glad you had that conversation.
She understood that's her meeting.
And
so
she understood it. And she was like, if we're going to do this, then that, you know, that doesn't bother me. So.
But she's probably not alone. And
she's
What the nice thing about pulling together that focus group is, if you didn't pull together that focus group, that conversation wouldn't have happened. And then back to, and there are probably things we don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, again, having this outside of the policy, but since he's had that conversation, he can now direct his coaches and saying, obviously, if, and then the clarification we have to make, because as we discussed this a little bit, if I'm the coach and you violate this,
mm-hmm.
and I have you, and I will have you back in for practices, however, if you start to misbehave in practice,
mm-hmm.
and get disruptive and violate
mm-hmm.
other rules, then I might send you home. It's
right.
It's not, you know, but that's outside of that.
Right.
I think too, it's important that, you know, if a student athlete makes a bad decision, that violates a trust.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just like any other job. You have to earn your trust back.
Mm-hmm.
So if that was a starter, and when they come back, they start coming off the bench or they don't get as much playing time, well, I don't think we can dictate that. You know, I think
if you say
you're off the team, that's one thing. But I think if you say, listen, you sat out, you had to leave for two games. We had to go rely on somebody else for two games. So you're going to have to earn this team's trust back. And I think that is part of the educational process.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they can't just come back in and pick up like nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 'cause something did happen. Somebody made a choice they shouldn't have made.
Well, and it's not fair to the rest of the team that's been carrying on in their absence.
Right.
So you're thinking you will put games in?
Yeah, I'll just put
20%
of the regular season.
And I love that this is going to be a good vehicle just to bring that consistency, because with so many sports, it's really hard to keep everybody consistent on the policy. So this is just another opportunity.
April?
Yes.
But that same topic, the exact same line.
Mm-hmm.
An example, I'll say, football season's 10 games, mm-hmm. there's two games left, and someone gets positive. I mean, what's 20% of two games?
Less it's a game.
It would be.
Okay. So it's one game.
But
that's
that
what it is. We round up.
Okay. So you always round up. So even if it's 0.2 or 0.1,
we
round
we
up.
We had that, actually.
Well, that makes just as long as
so,
you're consistent
so
with how you're doing it.
So I almost wonder, so as to help clarify that as well, to say, look, at minimum, it's going to be a game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're gonna a minimum of one, but it could be more. Because 20% of the season could be more. But if you are saying that they are gonna, you would round up. There's 2 out of 10 football games left. They're going to have to sit out for at least one, or baseball or basketball
mm-hmm.
or whatever it is.
A minimum of one.
A minimum of one.
Mm-hmm.
So they understand
that. So that takes out your point.
Yep.
So that's
fine. That it's more for clarity, so they won't have to guess and ask you, well, what's 20% of 10 games?
Mm-hmm. And then just one more thing. These are the guidelines. I like that they're separate from the policy, but we haven't seen a policy. What's the policy going to look like?
We're going to bring a policy in, and there are two local examples we can look at, North Olmsted and Avon.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them, they've adapted the same policy. I can't remember the number. It's probably 5332, if I remember,
mm-hmm.
recall correctly. But it's the drug policy or the chemical abuse policy,
mm-hmm.
and those policies will just direct me to have this committee to do this. And it could be as detailed as we want. We want them to create guidelines that will incorporate this, and this,
mm-hmm.
or it could be a little bit more basic, and we can send language out. And that's what Joe just said to me a moment ago, is to point out the next step.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great transition to mm-hmm. the next step. So we wanted this part to be in a place where we were pretty comfortable with everything that's in here. Few tweaks might happen on, like I know Tony highlighted, who pays for the follow-up tests.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a couple things that I think they'd have to work out, but overall, this is, if they get the go-ahead that this is solid, they can start communicating. They can go off and start communicating to students and families. We can draft up our policy and do two reads on that. We would do first read in our May meeting. We'll have a policy that we'll send out in the next week saying this is what it's going to look like. You guys can look at that, and then we can read it twice.
And then have the second reading
June.
Next year. Or this year.
Have it in June.
Oh.
Yeah, we'll get a draft policy out in the next week. So you guys can start looking at that by their May 24th meeting.
Yeah, you can first read.
I heard guidelines for a year and then address.
No, the policy will direct us to the guidelines. We won't put this stuff inside policy.
Yeah, we have
I don't know if we'd ever
policy.
Want to do that, to be honest with you. Because the thing about this sort of thing is you may go a year, you may go 2 years, and then something happens that you never would have thought of.
Right.
And then you're kind of stuck in that situation. But we can address that a little more later.
I do worry at times when things are guidelines versus policy. These guidelines are just that. They're not hardcore policies. They can be interpreted sometimes differently from different people. Sometimes guidelines may or may not get followed. The policy, I think, you know, would be, and I may be, this be misinterpreting the difference, but if you could explain definitively the difference between, you know, for coaches, you know, making a decision based on the guideline versus based on the policy.
But the guideline is connect, this guideline is directly connected to a policy. And so therefore it gives that guideline more authority. And the other part, one of the biggest reasons why a guideline or a policy is not followed is that it's not communicated. And the other part with this is my understanding is this would then be placed inside the handbook. So then it would be out there publicly. So even if we weren't following it, somebody can come back and say, look, this is not being followed. So I think this one would have more teeth than a guideline that's talked about and put on a shelf and kind of forgotten about over the years. I think this one's more active in, because it would be inside that handbook. The handbook, again, would be approved by the board.
Yeah. Well, then this brings up one question. Just to make sure, and I know you kind of nodded at me, if we're going to be communicating this, I'm a rule follower, so shouldn't we wait until the policy has been accepted before we're communicating to our students and staff?
You certainly can. You don't have to. Again, and you could certainly put a caveat on it and say these are the anticipated guidelines, you know, pending board approval. Or pending board approval of the policy, drug testing policy.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in order to have your policy in place, it requires two readings and an adoption by the board. So what Dr. Goggin was saying is doing the first reading at the May 21st board meeting, and then at the June board meeting, we could do the second reading and adoption if the board so chooses to do so. I think the concern from that I've heard expressed from Mr. Wilson and Mr. Cipollone is they would like to start communicating it to students before they leave.
Mm-hmm.
So what they can do is certainly say these are the, you know, these are the guidelines that will follow up with the proposed policy.
Mm-hmm.
If the board institutes the policy, we already have the guidelines in place.
Mm-hmm.
If the board would choose not to implement the policy, well then, you know, it doesn't mm-hmm. matter at that point.
Can I chime in?
Absolutely.
It's important to me to have a conversation with the
mm-hmm.
students. I think that
yeah.
that is the fair thing to do because if, so say this happens in June, they haven't heard from Mr. Cipollone and I,
mm-hmm.
we're like, welcome back for the 2018 school year.
Mm-hmm.
Here you go. I don't think that, I build that place as much as I can on trust and I feel like that would be a broken
right.
trust. I feel like
mm-hmm.
I owe it to the students to stand in front of them and at the very least say, hey, this is what it may look like if this happens.
Mm-hmm.
I agree
sense.
Well.
Yeah.
One, it gets the message out there sooner. Because I know we tried to do as much outreach as we could for
mm-hmm.
the community meetings, but if the message is going out pretty loud and clear from both of you gentlemen, then it'll start resonating with a lot more people and a lot more parents. And if they know that there's going to be two policy sittings and votes, we may get
yeah.
some of those people that, you know, we're on the fringe or like, I didn't know about this, and then start to show up and at least
yeah.
feel like they're having their voices heard.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I just want to make sure we're within our procedural guidelines. So I'm going to give this to you because the rest was just suggestions to make it clearer.
I
from
had
a parent perspective.
I think one or two, what I think are some
so if you have
questions.
Any questions because the arrows might not make sense to you,
okay.
call me.
At least you didn't use a red pen.
No, absolutely not. And again, if you didn't do any of it, it would be fine. It was just me doing my thing. That's what I do.
This might be more if a student today is caught, say at the high school, smoking marijuana in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
I know it never happened, but by chance it happened. They would immediately get suspended, I'm guessing.
Correct.
Okay. Obviously, no drug testing needed there. And that suspension goes on their record. Now, in the record, does it state why they were suspended?
Yes.
Okay. If a student, this is where I'm just looking for
sure.
clarification. So if a student tests positive for marijuana through a random drug test, I know we've talked about the privacy aspects of it and there's only one or two people at the school, does that make its way to the student's record?
No.
It does not?
No.
So there really will be no record of it?
No.
That they tested positive?
And the reason, and it's because you're talking about an act. In your first example, you're talking about an act that happened at school.
Correct.
And the second one is an act that we don't have any indication that it did happen at school.
But it could.
But we don't know. I mean,
I know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, it could have happened in the, you know, before, I mean, the parking lot or whatever.
And I think, and for us to do something like that, we don't have the level of, the level of evidence is not as high as beyond a reasonable doubt in a criminal court or even a preponderance of evidence like you would see in a civil court. We have to be just over 50% sure that it happened here. And in that scenario, with just getting a positive test, I wouldn't even be able to defend to say that we were over 50% sure that that act happened here.
So, okay. No, that's fine. Going back to junior high, so there is no punitive, and there is no record, so I'm just devil's advocate here. But if the student does test positive, they're going to have to continue to be tested on a go-forward basis. I can't remember everything as relates to, you know, if they test the next time and they're clean, they can go back to participation. You know, I'm not sure what the on and off is. I gotta believe that there is an on and off. Like you're off the team, but if you're
on at the middle school.
I'm sorry. Oh no, I'm sorry. I'm thinking about in the high school.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm sorry. I guess what I'm getting to is my question is, I know we're not keeping track of it, but do we open up ourselves, since we're doing the drug testing, do we open up ourselves to any potential liability that by chance, you know, a student, you know, ends up a junior or senior, they're a habitual failure or non-negative. Granted, maybe they're multiple sports, you know, variety of different things, and we're not tracking it per se, and then something horrible happens, either to the student or, and I know we're doing our part to get them help, or, you know, they're driving drunk and they crash into somebody in school, but we knew about it. I'm just trying to throw out worst case.
So liable because we haven't?
Yeah, we're not keeping track of it.
When
I spoke to other principals, I think the one thing that I heard was you don't really fall into that one time or that one person X amount of times because you do get them help. And in some instances, if it's that extreme, you know, they may not try to, if it's that extreme, how often are they actually participating in sports repeatedly? Then you're really just focused on the school, and we're lucky to have Kathy McGinty, where we're really advocating with that family. So I think, Well, we can play out the scenario of test positive, test positive, test positive. The people that I spoke to that have done this, they don't see that. They see it as really kids look at it as kids and families. It's eye-opening to families.
Yeah.
It's eye-opening to a student, but it does provide the option of, hey, we need to straighten this out because on some level it's embarrassing to both as well. And they take that pretty seriously.
And let me add in as well, you know, as we fall under public records of stuff, there is still going to be a record that's kept by Kathy McGinty or whoever is overseeing it, okay, so that she's going to know that. It's not a public record as it falls under a student, a privileged record, okay. But the difference, and I think where Dr. Godwin was saying is, you know, there's your official educational record. That record that can be requested from colleges or when you would transfer from one school to another, you know, you have your official record, and part of that record is suspension and expulsions, okay? In this case, a drug test, a non-negative drug test would not go on your official educational record, partly because it's not part of the, we're not testing it for educational purposes. Again, in the example that you used, a kid who was caught smoking pot in the school gets expelled or suspended 10 days, whatever it is, and that does become part of their record. But this doesn't. So will there be a way of tracking? Yes. Will it be part of their official record? No.
Yeah. No, my point was really just, since we're doing something new, we're collecting, I say that in quotes, information on students if they test negative, whichever one it is. And do we open ourselves up for liability down the road if something happens and they look at the school and say, well, you guys, you tested it and how come you didn't do more or whatever kind of a thing, versus playing, you could plead the ignorant thing and say, well,
But I think the two parts for me, and I'm not an attorney, and we could certainly reach out to legal counsel if the board would so choose, but I think the two things from my point of view is you've got FERPA and HIPAA. So FERPA is your Federal Education and Privacy Act, so your educational records are private to begin with, okay? Secondly, you have HIPAA, and you're talking about a medical case here, especially as, I will tell you, from our point of view, if we have an employee who tests positive, usually we have to go through some sort of a process. You can't just fire somebody because it can be tied to a medical diagnosis or disease that's being more and more recognized as.
We take all that into account.
Correct.
Students on a prescription.
Well, no. Even drug abuse itself is being recognized more and more as a disease, and therefore is subject to HIPAA. And you can't just say, "Oh, you failed, you're out of here," like you can with an initial test for employment purposes. If you have somebody now who you have to work through a treatment program in a lot of cases, because even alcohol abuse is recognized more and more as a disease, not a direct punitive piece from even employment law.
Yeah.